You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, when people come to visit Wisconsin, they ask what can't-miss things they should do here. There's a lot to choose from, ranging from the obvious and highly accessible to some lesser-known places off the beaten path. And even for people who do live here, there's always something more to add to the list of uniquely Wisconsin places to go, sights to see, activities to do, foods to eat. Our next guest rounded up 100 great ideas. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What's on your Wisconsin bucket list? What are your top recommendations for visitors? If you've recently crossed something off your list, what was it? And when people come to visit you in your part of the state, what's the gotta-do thing there? Whether it's a sight to see, an experience, a restaurant, you name it, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Danelle Gay is a TV host, travel writer, former chef, and author whose books include Midwest Road Trip Adventures. Her new book is called 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. Danelle, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me. It's fun to be here.
All right. You've got 100 things. You actually have more than 100 things because some of them, like, you know, this kind of food. Yeah, here's some other restaurants, too. So it's 100 plus. What did it take for something to make the cut as a must-do Wisconsin thing for your book?
It was tough. I got 191 things in there, actually. So you're right. I managed to squeeze a few more gems of Wisconsin in. And I had a huge list to start with. But you kind of had to balance things out from the state, you know, kind of all over geographically. And I wanted to do a mix of some things that were like no-brainers. You have to eat a cream puff at the Wisconsin State Fair to some fun things that are more hinted gems. So it was a tough, delicate, like, balance to create.
Now, before we start visiting, you're doing something special with this book as you go around, and you're doing a lot of readings, and they're fundraisers, in effect. Tell us what's going on.
Actually, a lot of the places that are in the book that are nonprofits, when I go back to that area and I'm doing a book event there, the profits of the book that day are going back to that organization. So even the kickoff party for my book is going to be in Sun Prairie, and that night all the sales will benefit the Sun Prairie Emergency Food Pantry.
Now, I'm hearing a lot of love for Wisconsin. Where does that come from for you?
Well, I'm born and bred here. I'm a diehard cheesehead myself. So.
I will, for all listening, there is a Packers t-shirt involved here, I should point out.
Is there a different team? Really? No. So, yeah, I mean, I was born and bred here. It's just, it's in our blood, you know? And when I was at the Governor's Conference on Tourism last year, I learned that the travel industry in Wisconsin got less federal relief dollars for COVID than any other Midwest state. And that kind of made me look at finishing this book a little differently. And that's when I realized I can use this book to give back to a lot of different areas and communities in Wisconsin that weren't going to see the money to help rebuild their businesses after COVID shut things down for a while.
Talking to Danelle Gay about her new book, 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 to share your must-do, must-experience things around the state of Wisconsin, famous or not, big or small, local, or you can find them all over the place. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. All right, now let's start naming some names. What I love to see there is Dr. Evermore's Forever Tron. This is just for a point of trivia. One of the very first radio interviews I ever did was with Tom Every, a.k.a. Dr. Evermore. Unique character, unique thing. People in the art world really do come to Wisconsin to see and experience this. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Folk art is incredible. And you just really have to experience it in the element that it was created. We talked for a little bit privately about the Kohler Art Center in Sheboygan, and they have 35 samplings of different artists. But yeah, Forevertron, you just have to stand there at that place and kind of absorb it yourself. It's almost overwhelming, but it's so cool. You have to see it in person.
Excellent. Now, food and drink. Now, this is, talk about tough to narrow down. Let's see. You've got some Door County fish boil, and you picked one, and this is another one where you said, or... here's a whole bunch of others. Talk about the fish boil in Door County.
that's like dinner and a show built in. And I picked the one that, you know, I thought had the best show first, because that's the part you sit outside on the patio and you watch the master at work doing the fish boil, and they tell the stories and history of the area. And that's half of the fun. I mean, eating it is great, but it's really the show leading up to it in advance. But that's, again, that's another really cool Wisconsin experience.
That's Door County. What were some of the other great food traditions you wanted to highlight and then went looking for the right restaurant or venue to match them up with?
Well, you have to have a Kringle in Racine, because there's all the Danish people that settled there. Wisconsin, they have something called Booyah. It's a different kind of soup, and that's usually the area you're going to find it. So we had to look for that. You got to have Eat at a Wisconsin Supper Club. Mm-hmm. And the one that I featured, I mean, there's tons of amazing supper clubs, but I featured Cantafio's in Beaver Dam because they're a Gold Star family and they have a really neat story about what they do for veterans.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit.
Well, they're a Gold Star family. They lost their son Ryan almost 20 years ago. And so they do free meals for veterans. On Memorial Day, they usually do a free feed, a free meal from 4 to 8. And that's when I'll be there this year signing books on Memorial Day. And we're going to donate the profits to the Wounded Warrior Project in Ryan's name. So they're an incredible family.
Other experiences that go along with foods that, I mean, there's the famous Goats on the Roof restaurant.
Oh, definitely.
Talk about that a little bit. Al Johnson's?
Al Johnson's. And that started out kind of as a gag where somebody brought the goats over to him. But I mean, you have to have the Swedish pancakes with the lingonberries there. That's just a given.
And then a $100 burger.
Oh, yeah. Madison's got the $100 burger, if you haven't heard about that one.
It's not the burger, though.
Not the burger, no. At the Jet Room, you can get the $100 burger, but that also then, besides your burger, it gets you a ride around Madison in a plane.
Right. Now, I've been there to the Jet Room, and this is like right next to the airport there.
Mm-hmm.
So you literally, people park their planes and walk in and get breakfast or whatever.
Oh, and they have a beautiful wall of windows where you can watch all the airplanes, you know, landing and taking off, too.
That was a great one for kids. Now, let's get to some, let's go to museums now.
Ooh.
How about that? You've got some great ones. Milwaukee, and I've talked to the directors there, the Black Holocaust Museum.
That was an amazing experience. When we toured that, I took my teenager and their best friend. And that's the first time I've ever heard two teenagers quiet for almost 2 hours.
Wow.
It was an amazing experience. How they put everything together, the journey that you walk through history was just amazing. And the conversations we had in the car afterward were incredible, too. They have this one thing where you're like walking underneath and it's like you're in the hold of a slave ship where you're like looking up and just, I invite you to go there and lay down underneath there and look and try and imagine what it would be like to be there and have that your only view for like 3 months in the transport. It's an incredible museum.
And then for a kind of an opposite experience, I remember with little kids running around and making noise and having a lot, just being super excited, railroad museums here in the state. We've got a few places to experience those.
Lots of great railroad museums. And, you know, from 2 to 102, who doesn't like trains? One of my favorite museums, Racine, the Racine Art Museum, they have their Peeps exhibition coming in. They have people from all over the world who send in their artwork, and they've made it from Peep candies. It's hilarious.
A lot of people would say that's the best use for Peeps.
Well, they float nicely in hot chocolate.
I know some people like to eat them, yeah. Let's bring out a caller now at 800-642-1234. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hello.
Well, anyone in Madison would say take them to Old Brick Gardens.
The Botanical Gardens, sure. And Kay, I understand you've got one more to recommend to us as well?
Yes. Mater's German Restaurant in Milwaukee for wonderful German food.
What's your favorite thing to eat at Mater's in Milwaukee, Kay?
Sauerbraten.
Okay, Sauerbraten. I used to be a big Rouladen fan when I'd go to German restaurants. So the Botanical Gardens, I can't remember if that ended up in the book.
It's hard because we have so many amazing ones in Wisconsin.
Right.
And like I said, you had to balance out the state. I mean, I could easily do 100 things in just Madison for this book, but I couldn't. Somebody else wrote that. The gardens that I did feature is the Janesville Rotary Gardens, because they have the 1.5 million holiday light display. That's their biggest fundraiser for the year. But I mean, Green Bay, Old Brick Gardens, there's so many amazing, amazing gardens that are, you know, available for us in Wisconsin. And it's funny that you mentioned Mater's, because I just got the contract to write Unique Eats and Eateries of Wisconsin. And that's one of the ones on my list of 84 to connect with. I agree. Mater's is amazing.
Okay. Thanks so much for sharing that. I appreciate that. And that highlights something else that kind of keeps coming up in your book, all the many ethnic traditions that Wisconsin has to draw from. That we've already talked about a couple of them. What are some more you might want to highlight?
Well, you know, amazing is a really amazing. Well, it's an incredible state for the fact that so many different ethnic groups settled here, everyone from the Swedes to the Germans, and then all of the different industries. We had a logging and a fishing and a mining. So it's just depending on where you go, there's something different and incredible to focus on.
We'll go back to our callers now. Scott is with us on the road on his way to Milwaukee now. Scott, hello.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
Good. What did you want to recommend, Scott?
Well, I would recommend going to GaryCon, which is a Dungeons & Dragons convention held in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. It's online. You wouldn't have any trouble finding it, except that it takes up all of the Grand Geneva Resort and Spa. So it's a pretty big convention these days. But it's so much fun because all the great old school gamers show up there.
Scott, thanks a lot. We've talked about Lake Geneva's origin story for Dungeons & Dragons, this game that changed the gaming world. Thanks for sharing that with us, Scott. Donnell, any thoughts on that one?
I was trying to work on a book that we'd had like fairs and celebrations and, you know, things like that that we could put in. So I'm working with that with my Midwest Travel Writer Network group. We're doing a couple of different books together, too. But Lake Geneva is beautiful. And the Grand Geneva, I mean, it's just beautiful there.
Scott, thanks for sharing that. We're talking to travel writer and author Donnell Gay about her new book. It's called 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You can offer your own recommendation. You could second one that our guest has made so far. If you work in service or tourism, what have things looked like over the last couple of years during the pandemic? Have you made big changes? Are you seeing more people coming back? What is your favorite thing to take an out-of-town visitor to in your neck of the woods? What is something that's still on your list? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk now with Donnell Gay, Wisconsin-based travel writer and blogger. Her new book is called 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. She has 100, actually a lot more than 100, ideas, travel suggestions, places to go. And you could share yours too at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Back to your calls now. Connie is with us in Portage. Connie, hello.
Hi. I think everybody should visit, at least in the summertime, Mineral Point.
What do you like about Mineral Point, Connie? Where should we stop?
Well, I tell you, there used to be a lot of antique craft shops there now. But the main thing you want to go to is the village. And for the life of me, I can't think of the name of it right now.
Pendarvis.
And yes. And that was one of the first places. I was born in Darlington. But when I got older, and that was one of the places I went so many times all summer long. So just thought I'd share that.
I love it, Connie. Thanks for sharing that and sharing that memory with us, too. Donnell, Mineral Point area.
Yeah, Pendarvis. And it's nicest because that the Wisconsin Historical Society has changed up how they do the tours. So it's more of kind of like a history, less of the mining community, but more of like the history and the redevelopment and the restoration that they've done. And then you also have to make time to go to the Red Rooster Cafe and get yourself a pasty.
Ooh, I love a good pasty. Mm-hmm. I haven't been there yet. Interesting. Connie, thanks a lot for sharing that. Joy is with us now in West Bend. Joy, hello.
Hi. What was really wonderful for us was to go to the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. They have one or more cranes of every species from the world. The only one that's not endangered is our sandhill cranes, which are coming back really strong. And they do work to save these cranes all over the world. And it's just beautiful to see them.
Joy, thanks so much. That is in the book, I know, Dana.
It is. There's 15 different kinds of cranes, and it's amazing the work that they're doing there.
And thanks for that call, Joy. This is the kind of thing you're looking for. Like, if you're not from Wisconsin, would you think, oh, yeah, Wisconsin, that's the place with the crane place?
No.
I doubt it. Right?
Right.
What other unexpected things are there like that, that you came up with for your book or that you've seen that like, yeah, oh, you know, if you're from outside of Wisconsin, you wouldn't think we have blank cranes or what, or forever trons or whatever.
There's so many fun things in the book. Like if you're in Washburn County, in Spooner, they have a railroad where you can ride the Mark Twain Zephyr. 10 shovel nose steamers were made in the mid-30s. 2 of them are in our museum. The other ones are lost to time. And this one has been refurbished. And so it's the only place in the world that you can ride one of these shovel nose steamers. And they're doing a fantastic job with the Mark Twain Zephyr. It's beautiful.
Fantastic. Only in Wisconsin. Joy, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Tim is with us next in Madison. Tim, hello.
Hi. I second the International Crane Foundation and the Red Rooster, but Copper Falls State Park, I think, is a state park that everyone should go to.
What? Paint us a picture, Tim. Go ahead and do it. Yeah,
it's in northern Wisconsin. It's just south of Ashland. Mm-hmm. It's the beautiful Iron River, I think, runs through that. I believe that's the name of it. Anyway, but there's a beautiful path that goes across the river in a couple different places. You have beautiful vistas and beautiful old growth white pines and cedars there. I think everyone owes it to themselves to see it. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for sharing that. I kick myself. I haven't been. I love waterfalls. I've been in Wisconsin a long time. I've been to Ashland. I still haven't been to Copper Falls. Deno, you've got a few different parks of various sorts in the book. Where do you point us toward?
Oh, well, I do have several different parks in the book. I kind of balance them throughout the state. But my group of friends from the Midwest Travel Network, we have a new book coming out end of May, and it is Midwest State Park Adventures. Uh-huh. And so every single one of our 49 state parks is going to be represented in that book. So, yes, I've been all over the state parks. I love our state park system. The way that they handle everything is just beautiful.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Danelle Gay is with us. Her newest book is 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. You can keep sharing yours at 800-642-1234. Jim joins us next in Richland Center. Hi, Jim.
Yes, good afternoon. Down in Greene County, there's New Glarus and Monroe. Monroe has cheese days every 2 years. It's a weekend event. They have a 3-hour parade each time. And also in New Glarus, there's 3 events. There's a Heidi Festival during the summer. There's Swiss Independence Celebration is the first weekend, I think, in August. And then their big deal is the Will and Tell Festival over Labor Day weekend. Any of those is worth seeing.
Jim, thanks for the call. New Glarus celebrating Wisconsin's Swiss heritage, Danelle.
The historic cheesemaking center down there, that's in the book. Absolutely fantastic. It's hard when you have a festival, especially every other year. But I love the heritage down there. And of course, Wisconsin cheese, I couldn't be prouder of that. I wear it on my head with 600 different kinds of cheese. And we have the largest amount of master cheesemakers than anywhere else in the world. It's an important area to visit.
Thanks a lot for that call, Jim, at 800-642-1234. So many festivals in the state, Danelle. I know that must have been one of the hardest things to sift and winnow, as we say here in Wisconsin. You've got, I think, some UFOs on the agenda for us, though, when it comes to festival season.
There's 3 different places in Wisconsin that has a UFO festival, and so I picked the one that's the oldest. But, yes, definitely. When you have a week where you can celebrate UFO sightings, that's just a fun hoot.
And one thing I liked about the book, too, I mean, you've got, you know, one at a time, you're 100. But after that, you've got some a seasonal plan and then travel itineraries. Like, I think there's art travel plan, things like that. Can you give us some inspiration on a plan, you know, a long weekend or a week off with some great things to do in Wisconsin?
Well, and it really depends. I had to try and break that down. So sometimes when you have kids or if you're empty nesters or if you just have like a long weekend. But yeah, breaking up seasonally and then giving you ideas and different things in the area. So like in Milwaukee, I would do a couple of different restaurants, talk about some of the museums like the Milwaukee Art Museum, the America Black Holocaust Museum, Mobcraft Brewery. Oh, man, they are so fun. You have to get one of their pretzels that's like bigger than your head. And the names of the different beers are crowdfunded. So what they come up with, just it cracks me up. But try to do different things like that.
Let's bring another caller on. Mac is with us calling from Milwaukee. Mac, hello.
Hi. I was going to say Minocqua's Winter Park is a great place for people. It's one of the better It's probably the best place outside of mountain regions to cross-country ski in the United States for now. And climate change is really threatening a lot of places to cross-country ski, but they still have really reliable snow there.
Mac, thanks for the call. I know Minocqua makes an appearance in the book tonight. I don't remember if it was the winter skiing, though.
I don't think it was. I'm trying to remember myself now off the top of my head.
Well, but northern Wisconsin, we haven't said too much. Well, what am I talking about? Copper Falls and now the Winter Park. Any other great northern Wisconsin? We talk a lot about
Northern
Wisconsin.
Train I was talking about, Washburn County. That's very northwest. They have everything from the Canoe Heritage Museum to just trying to think of some of the other fun things there. Perlick Distillery, that's a lot of fun. Instead of farm to fork, like a lot of great places in Wisconsin, they're farm to cup. They make incredible vodka and have a fun tasting room with craft cocktails.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last a little over a minute or so, what do you look forward to in spring in Wisconsin?
You know, our seasons are so beautiful. Our state parks, they're different every single season. So they're fun to get out and see just as, you know, the seasons change. But it's fun to just get back outside again and do a lot of things.
I've gotten better at doing winter state parks, especially with COVID. I got, you know, those chains for the shoes. You don't slip and slide all over the place. Do you get out in any of the winter parks? Is there a favorite?
We tried snowshoeing this year. That was fun.
Where'd you go?
Went to a couple of different things. Janesville has a nice area down there. Even Sun Prairie, Wisconsin was doing something fun where it was a snowshoe by candlelight hike. And I've learned that's a lot of work. More so than I thought it was. It was a good workout.
Okay. And speaking of workouts, you mentioned a huge, busy signing schedule. Where are your next couple events?
Oh, my gosh. I'm a little all over. So if they go to travelingcheesehead.com/book-events, they can see my full calendar right now.
Awesome. Danielle, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Danielle Gay is a Wisconsin-based travel writer, blogger, and author. We talked to her today about her new book. It's called 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. Well, if you have more suggestions you want to share with the world, want to show off something in your neck of the woods in particular, you can keep doing it. Share your favorites on the Ideas Network Facebook page or send us an email, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, rags to riches, the self-made man. They're common phrases in American history. They're usually used in a positive way, virtues that help us find success. But our next guest says too much self-reliance has its downsides and that these ideas are at a toxic level in American society. In her new book, she makes the case that they limit our economy, our politics, our day-to-day lives. She calls for a more helpful future where we can be comfortable depending more on one another and in some cases the government. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the principle of self-reliance has gone too far, or do you like that this is a big part of the American ideal? If you have lived in the U.S. and elsewhere, how do you compare and contrast our ideas of self-reliance in the United States versus other places you might have lived? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Alyssa Quart is a journalist, poet, and author of books including Squeezed and Republic of Outsiders. She's executive director of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. She collaborated with WPR's To the Best of Our Knowledge on a three-part series called Going for Broke. Her latest book is called Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. Alyssa, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, it's great to be here.
You've written a lot in the past about money, work, and how tough it can be to afford life in the U.S. for a variety of reasons. What led you now to tackle the idea of self-reliance?
Well, I've been running this organization, the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, which I created with the late, great Barbara Ehrenreich, for 10 years, which means I've gotten 10 years worth of letters and comments from people saying, you know, why are the people that you write about and the people who write for us, because some of our writers are working poor, why are they struggling so much? Why don't they own their house? Why do they own their house? Why don't they have a college education? Why do they have a college education? Kind of fault finding people for their own economic instability and poverty. You know, why do they have kids out of wedlock or, you know, without a husband? Why do they have kids with different men? You know, and there's a lot of blame and kind of moral finger pointing that I saw. And I wanted to know where that all came from.
you dug into this history. And one of the things you found is this idea of pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps that made it into the title of your book was actually originally kind of an absurd statement, a mocking statement. Some of the first examples is, interestingly, in newspapers here in Wisconsin. Can you talk about the origin of that phrase?
Yeah, there was a farmer named Nimrod Murphy who, and they were sort of this newspaper article was mocking him for that he wasn't going to be able to get over the Cumberland River or a barnyard fence, and they used the straps of his boot as a joke. And then later in the Racine Advocate, they said, you know, the governor must be trying to pull himself up by his bootstraps. And again, it was mocking somebody, like, what a joke, like you can't chew gum and walk at the same time or whatever. It was that kind of phrase. But over the decades, it became this reality. People were like, okay, I got to really do this. You know, people are taught in school now that they're supposed to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Somebody came up to me at an event and told me that he'd been taught that in school. So we've come a long way since it was a joke in Racine.
Then there's the frontier idea where, you know, people went out and homesteaded and settled and lived tough lives, which they did. The tough life part is pretty true, I think. But as you point out, they did it in one of the largest federal government giveaway programs ever. Could you talk about that that paradox of our frontier mythmaking?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, what inspired this was I was reading Laura Ingalls Wilder, Little House on the Prairie and, you know, Plum Creek and all these other, which of course, you know, she was actually born in rural Wisconsin. So it's perfect. I'm talking to you about this in 1867. But her books were all extolling, you know, her Ma and Pa, we remember them, you know, Michael Landon in the 1980s TV show, 70s and 80s, doing it all by themselves, you know, planting their crops. As it turned out, when you look into this, first of all, Pa was a terrible farmer and he needed the help of his neighbors to, you know, feed his family. But second of all, they got money from the federal government through the Homestead Act of 1862. So this family got a parcel of land for free, and it was one of the biggest land giveaways in our country's history. And one of the pioneer mythologies, right, is we did it on our own. We arrived by this in this covered wagon. We chopped our own wood. We built our own house. That, sure, that's true, but they also got the land for free. This is not happening now.
I'm going to skip over a bunch of history and look at the present day and the stories we tell about ourselves. And you say whether we're talking about politicians or a lot of people who might look self-made on the face of it, parts of the story, parts of the biography get left out. Could you talk about our, I guess, modern day myth-making?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's somebody right now who's about to be indicted, Donald Trump, who would constantly say he was a self-made man and that his father was a Horatio Alger story. But it, obviously, I mean, he was raised with millions of dollars. He'd been given a $1 million loan, right, to start a business. And, you know, he was in a huge amount of debt also, and he kept borrowing money. So he was dependent on his creditors as well. And obviously, every single person who worked for the Trump organization, and at this point, these, you know, millions of voters who follow him, and Elon Musk similarly is sort of extols doing things by himself. You know, now he owns our big social media platform, Twitter. But you know, he also got money for his research and development from the federal government, and he also came from wealth. And so I just felt it was important to keep saying, not that there's something shameful about coming from wealth, but these people were born on second or third base. And so this assumption that we're all supposed to be able to be a tycoon or a titan or run for president or, you know, just survive easily is a lie.
Talking to Alyssa Court about her new book, Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. You can join in with your thoughts, experiences, or questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Paul is with us in Northern Illinois. Paul, hi.
Hey, how you doing, Rob? Good to hear you.
Yeah, what did you want to tell us about, Paul?
So in my early 20s, I was a floundering, panicky, angsty young man trying to sell stereos and TVs in a store and just trying to make my way. And, you know, in our system, afraid of sort of just poverty, I guess. And I moved to Denmark and I lived there for 16 years, and in my time there, the first thing they did when I landed was gave me a national health card, so I had free health care. And then I received a stipend until I got on my feet, which took me about a good 6 months to start being self-sufficient. And they would even supplement via aid if I needed it. My kid right now is going to college. It's paid for. Taxes are enormously high there, in our view. So if you're rich in America and you look at their tax base, you would say, this is crazy. However, when you think about how it's distributed, they don't have the angsty, panicky young people like I was. I'm extremely grateful for a social democracy, not a socialism, but social democracy.
Paul, thanks for sharing your experience. Alyssa, what do you think of his compare and contrast story there?
I love that. I mean, one thing that I found, I looked at volunteerism, you know, where people lend a helping hand, right? That's something that is always being extolled in this country and is supposed to replace the kind of social safety net the caller just mentioned. But in countries with the highest volunteerism rates, Denmark, as he said, Netherlands, Canada, New Zealand, they also have the strongest government-supported safety net. It's not a zero-sum game. You'll still be helping your fellow man, and you'll still be, you know, creating mutual care systems in your social environment if you had a better social safety net. And also, I mean, if you look at the OECD numbers of industrialized nations, the U.S. has one of the gives the least part of their GDP to daycare, at least one of the least to daycare or childcare for their citizens. And that's just another thing that there's no real reason why. And there's this idea that somehow people won't be taking care of themselves or being good citizens if they don't have a social safety net.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to David now in New Richmond. David, hi.
Hi. Say, I would 100% agree there's nothing wrong with the social safety net, but I would have to disagree kind of with the premise here. You know, my grandparents came from Germany and had nothing, and my grandfather apprenticed at the railroad and worked his butt off, became a shop manager, and my father apprenticed, became an expert in the rail industry. Working at railroads, which were union-based, but here's something that my grandmother said. When my father ended up going with another railroad that went bankrupt, and he went out on his own as a businessman, and I was complaining that he was gone a lot, and this is what my grandmother said to me. There are people who let things happen, and there are people who make things happen. Which one are you going to be? Whether it's a job that you're trying to get better at or the business that he's trying to make, you have to make a decision in your life. What kind of person are you? Are you going to let things happen or are you going to make things happen? That stuck with me the rest of my life.
David, thanks for the call. Alyssa, your thoughts?
Well, you know, it takes 10,000 hours to have mastery over a domain. It was one of a study someone had done, and it's been proven over and over again that kind of hard work and effort and exertion is really how we become good at something. So the caller's right. It does take hard work, but it's not hard work alone. And that's just the point of this book, that it's gone into overdrive. I mean, yes, my grandparents were immigrants. They came from Poland, Hungary, Russia, and they didn't speak English when they arrived, and they became American citizens and, you know, sent me to college and money working in a shoe store. So I'm with the caller. I understand they work 6 hours, 6 days a week. But at the same time, right now, it's this kind of rise and grind mindset. Like if you go on TikTok or social media, you'll see you can they say things like 9 to 5 is for the week, or you know, you have to have lots of side hustles. And it's a really frightening version of this hard work ideology that we live with, you know, that is not, it's not really supportable, because one of the things of the messaging is that you have to do lots of different things, which is not what your grandparents did or what my grandparents did, because that kind of dissipates your energy. But they're saying you got to, you know, work as a physical therapist and a personal trainer, and then you have to sell CBD, and then part of a multi-level marketing scheme. It's the variety and the number of things that gigs that we're supposed to be working, and the lack of unionization for the work that we do have.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to journalist and author Alyssa Court about her latest book. It's called Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about self-reliance, how we talk about it, think about it, practice it here in the United States? Do you have ways in your family, your neighborhood, your group of friends where you depend on each other, rely on each other? Do you feel bad when you have to reach out for help, whether it's to a friend or family member or to a government program? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to journalist and author Alyssa Court about her new book, Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Alyssa, before we go back to our callers, I want to talk sort of about the emotional side of our attitudes toward help. I'll share a very, story from my own household. I've been married a long time. When I'm sick, my wife takes care of me. When she's sick, I take care of her. Invariably, the sick one getting taken care of apologizes again and again. I'm sorry. I'm such a pain. I'm such a bother. Blah, blah, blah. And the other one's like, shut up. That's what we're here for. Why do we feel so ashamed, maybe, or apologetic in those moments where we might need help, even though we know we're going to offer it the next time around?
That's so funny, because I think this is what the difference between the Midwest and like a strong elbow New or sharp elbow New Yorkers, because yeah, when I'm sick, I'm like, get me the orange juice. There's no apology. What I'm trying to develop in myself, and I want others to find in themselves, I call it the art of dependence, not just interdependence, dependence. And it's really hard to learn how to either take care of someone else or be taken care of without apologizing, and to see it as an art and a craft and a skill, like something that we should be proud of. Like, usually we're ashamed of any dependence that we have, and independence is what we value. When kids, climb on the monkey bars, we say, good, you're doing it by yourself. But, the parts of children that are dependent and the parts of adults that are dependent are of value too. And so that's part of what I'm trying to do in this book. It's also I call it radical self-help. It's like to have more acceptance for ourselves when we are at our most vulnerable and needy, so we can also accept others when they're vulnerable and needy.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Heather is with us in Brookfield. Heather, hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
What did you want to bring up, Heather?
Yeah, this is a really interesting topic because it brings me to a specific time in my life when I had just had twins. And it was interesting. I was in another state, and there's state. My husband was a student and going through a master's program and working. And so we were on Medicaid, but under Medicaid, they did not even let me see an OB-GYN. They just had me see family medicine residents. The whole time I was pregnant with twins, and I didn't even see an actual OB-GYN until I had complications after the operation. And I remember standing in my apartment, and I had complications. I didn't understand them. I couldn't do the things that I used to be able to do. And my parents were there to help me, who came from a rugged line of pioneers. And my dad went to Harvard. They were hard workers and instilled that hardworking aspect in me, which I lived my whole life. But up until that point, I suddenly couldn't do the things I used to be able to do. And my dad said, Heather, you need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And I knew that I couldn't. Like, that was not possible.
Heather, thanks a lot for sharing that story. Alyssa, we can be self-reliant until sometimes we can't.
Yeah, I just found that very moving, Heather, because that was part of when I recognized dependence, or I both my daughter's dependence on me and my dependence on others. When I was pregnant, I was at hyperemesis the whole time. I don't know if anyone has had that, but you're sick the whole time. It's what Kate Middleton had. And you know, you become very dependent on people, something you're not used to when you're, you know, youngish. I was in my 30s, a woman. So the Medicaid story is heartbreaking that you didn't get adequate care. But I also think I'm glad that you had a voice inside yourself that said, I can't do this alone. I need more than this. And that's part of it. I mean, we can try to find the resources, try to develop them both politically, economically, and in our neighborhoods, you know, within doing it ourselves. But we also have to have that voice inside ourselves saying it's okay to need it. So thank you for sharing that.
Heather, thanks a lot for calling in, talking to Alyssa Court about her new book, Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. Alyssa, you conclude your book offering some advice. There's going to be a lot of policy debates about what state and federal government might do, but you also offer suggestions about how people can build communities where people help each other. Can you share some of the practical advice you give in the book?
Yeah, so I went on a journey, really. It was during the pandemic, and I went on a journey to find alternative American dreams. And I did find them. I found them in the ways that people were organizing businesses, something called worker co-ops, where the workers own their own labor. They own their companies or the nonprofits that they work for. And I interviewed many people who belong to those. I talked to people who were part of mutual aids. I'm sure in Madison and other parts of Wisconsin, you guys had that, but during the pandemic, where people delivered food to their ailing neighbors, and it was reciprocal. It's not a charity. You may give food one day or pharmaceuticals one day, and the next day you receive it. Other forms like participatory budgeting, where citizens help decide city budgets and they sit in on meetings. Again, it's a voluntary thing. And also kind of therapy that was interesting, because right now we have a epidemic of anxiety and depression. And this was kind of mutual care therapy that was peer-to-peer therapy, where people would talk about their economic struggles, sort of like what Heather just did, as part of the therapy. And I found that very beautiful. I came up with a name for it, inequality therapy. But these are just a few of the fixes that I found, new American dreams that I found.
Do you have thoughts for us to do kind of, I don't know, maybe a self-reliance gut check and inventory to see, hey, yeah, these are ways I can be totally self-reliant, and that's cool. These are ways where maybe I should let some help into my life.
Yeah, that's sort of what I've been trying to do when I've been talking to people about this. And I mean, one thing that I've done is to try to find the sources of my own strength or happiness or achievement. Think about who was behind them and sort of attribute. It's that's become my mantra. Rather than gratitude, I think about attribution. So, you know, the people I work with at the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, my mom, my grandparents, you know, my daughter. Yeah, just all the people like you, the people that I worked with in Wisconsin, you know, that really shaped me, changed my life, teachers I've had. And that's just, it's been nice to think about creative output or work output as a collective thing rather than just done by oneself. It makes it more meaningful, really.
Alyssa, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Alyssa Court, journalist and executive director of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. You could also hear the work she did with, to the best of our knowledge, on the three-part series Going for Broke. We've got a link up at WPR.org/Central Time. Plus, if you need information about changes in Badger Care Plus, we've got a couple links up there alongside that one.